Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is our state representative, Scott Dianda. It's election season, but it's always a good time to have you in, Scott. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
I want to talk, you know, you guys are in a little bit of a break here before I guess it gives you guys a chance to campaign and go around and talk to people. What are you hearing are important issues?
Well, the most important issue that we're hearing all the time, no matter where I go in the seven counties, is the energy issue. I mean, people are so upset about what's happening with their power bills. You know, this is something that we all are involved with on the energy level. We all sit at the kitchen table writing out those power bills, and they are staggering. I mean, if you're a small business owner, you know, you see the rates on what we pay, and it's very high. Our power costs are high, very high.
There was a lot of confusion not too long ago because there was some information that was put out about, you know, that people's electric bills were going to go down by like 65 cents or something like that. It was a really small amount, and they said, no, actually it's going up. And by the way, this is part of a larger $7 increase that was implemented earlier in the year. So, you know, it was billed as a break to our energy bills, but really it was, you know, they're all going up no matter what.
Well, where it starts and it really hits home for us in the UP, especially on this west end, is that we have the Ontonagon White Pine power plant that's operational. And that generates power for us, and that is kind of a backup. It's a safety feature designed to help our grid in the UP. And what we found out is they gave them a 90-day shutdown notice, and this would be the SSR payments. That would reduce our bill by $2.50 to $5 a month. But for a lot of us that are served by UPCO, we do have an increase that's coming that was voted on by the Utility Commission. And that's something that, you know, we'll see some change in the bill. But you were right, Rick, that, I mean, we are going to see an uptick in the cost. And I think that one of the things that I want people to understand, that White Pine power plant is there to really help the grid and make sure that, you know, the reliability is there. Now, the administration at the state level, through the Department of Energy now in Michigan State, we're looking at that coming offline. So this was scheduled to be knocked down. It was going to be shut down by 2020. But this was our safety net to have this power plant operational. And I think that, you know, we just want to make sure that people understand reliability. We all count on electricity today. It touches every aspect of our life. And it also affects a lot of people that are very vulnerable. People that are having oxygen machines. They only got so much oxygen in tanks. We got people on life support in these hospitals. So I'm really concerned about reliability and the price. Now, on the 30,000 foot level, looking down on this energy for Michigan, we have legislation in the House and the Senate pending. And a lot of this legislation deals with how we're going to go for the next 20 to 30 years. But I really, myself personally, for the sake of our pocketbook, I want to see more competition. I would like to see us create some legislation where we don't have such a mass change in the price. Because when we start looking at the seven counties that I represent, if you're in Ironwood, you're on Xcel Energy, and over there they're paying about 7-8 cents a kilowatt. And if you come into Houghton County, you're paying about 24 cents a kilowatt with UPCO. And if we go over into Marquette, you know, we're looking at Board of Water and Light over there, and they're looking at like 14 cents with their new investments of their new power systems. So, you know, we really got to get this under control, because to be able to get people to relocate up here for either if they're going to retire, come up here for new businesses, we've got to have a good playing field for the power situation. And right now it's just a pattern of all over the board. Well, what's nice about having power that's produced in our seven counties is the fact that, number one, you got the reliability, and number two, our people are at those facilities, and we got people working. And when we look like at the Lawrence Worden plant, also, you know, they're producing power down there, and they produce the power that services one of the big employers also is Solitex. I mean, they have brought people up from the other state of Georgia where their other plant is because they put on another shift over there. So, you know, reliability, to have a good price on the power, and to have our folks working is kind of what I'd like to see in the future, to make sure that, you know, we are looking at more microgrid systems and not just rely on these major one size fits all for a state, because when we do have a power loss, I wouldn't want to have us out of power up here in the middle of winter.
So what is the plan for 2020 and beyond?
Well, the plan for 2020 and beyond is they are looking at, with the legislation, to be able to make sure that we have more renewables in this. Because one of the things that a lot of folks in the discussion in the power industry look at is if we put all our eggs in one basket with the natural gas for these plants, because we're going to be going with no coal in 2020, you know, we're really concerned about the cost of our heating and industrial applications with the natural gas. So those are the things that we got to look at to start seeing what other successful states are doing and other companies, how they're diversifying. So I'm definitely, you know, really wanting to make an impact on this new legislation coming, because I want them to understand what we need for the UP. We are very unique up here. There's only 360,000 of us in the whole UP. You know, we're just a very fraction of the state population, but, you know, we are paying the highest rates in the state, because when I talk to my colleagues in the lower Michigan area, I mean, they're paying about 12 cents, so they're paying about half of what we're paying. You know, we got a lot longer heating operations and the longer winters. We need more lights because it gets darker faster. We spend a lot more on utilizing electricity costs because of our heating.
So two new power plants are being planned. Any news that we can be excited about?
Yes, there is news. We've had a meeting with We Energies as of last week, and the power that they're looking at generating would be done on the Cleveland Cliff site, natural gas generation. They're also looking at a site in the 110th district in Barraga Houghton County.
That's
so
huge.
That would be huge, because we really want to see the investment made to make sure that long term that we have people working the construction, and then the long term opportunity for employment, and just to make sure that we got that reliability. And I think that is a big thing, to make sure that, you know, we're controlling our own destiny up here, and we've got local people running these situations that we can count on.
Well, I would consider the fact that they're building these things another, would kind of dovetail into our next topic, but, you know, it's certainly job creation. It's an opportunity for employment. It's got to be, you know, step in the right direction.
Well, and I think, too, on the job front, there is just so many things that we can utilize up here. Our natural resources is number one. I mean, that's why we are all up here. That's what brought us up here, the mining, the lumbering issues. I mean, those are the things that got the attention put on this area because of our natural resources. You know, and going into the future, you know, I just want to make sure that we do it right, that we extract the metals out, that we can do something with it. And I think one of the things that we really got to focus on is high-end products. If we are going to cut down a tree, I think that we should be doing something to make very high-end products out of that. I mean, it's the furniture. It's making sure that our end product is not just exporting just the material itself. I think that we got a lot of opportunity with technology, how it's changing. I know that the Michigan Tech Smart Zone has been very much involved with a lot of different products. I have talked to different folks that are looking at medical packaging that's sterile packaging that's made out of paper product. So, I mean, these are the things that there's a future there for us to do high-end products that are going to employ people. One of the other things that I think that we can go back to in our day of history around here is the agriculture that we had. You know, the dairy has really declined in the state of Michigan as far as, you know, in the UP especially. But I see that there's a lot of more investment in the beef cattle right now. And that is something that we have an abundance of. We have an abundance of land that was cleared before. We have a lot of water, and we got people out of work. And I think that's a new industry that we can get back and running in the UP. Very proud to go through Ontonagon and see the beautiful steers that we have up on those fields up there. I mean, you know, we got that area. We certainly can utilize it.
I agreed. You don't always see it when you're driving around town, because I had to take a trip through Chassel off the main road there, and I was like, wow, there's I didn't know there was cows in Chassel, but certainly enough, there was a farm there, and
sure,
drove past a bunch of cows. So, okay, I'm glad to see it happening. I'd love to see more of it.
Well, and that's something that, you know, on the state level and working with our federal folks is to be able to develop that business and help that business, because, you know, to do that, we're going to need to have people who are going to be able to inspect those steers we're going to have to look at, you know, developing these jobs through the school system. I mean, I think we got a big opportunity up here with hands-on training, with vocational training. We've got a lot of smart young people. There's a lot of folks that just do not want to go on to the college level. And we have an opportunity up here to start looking at our school systems and developing these new resources for these children to be able to grow and stay here. And I think the agricultural end is one. I also believe that, you know, we got a lot of hospitality places out there. We had a meeting with the State Tourism Commission in Marquette this last week. We talked about how they're looking for employees. I think it needs to start in our schools. We can train them in vocational training and have them understand the hospitality industry. As I go around the seven counties and talk to a lot of our businesses that have a hard time finding people to work, I mean, that's, for me, it's just unacceptable. I mean, we got people that are willing to work. We got to train them because we could put them in the job market, especially, you know, ninth grade through 12th, to be able to train a lot of these students in hospitality industry, to be able to move them out if they want to go through college. I mean, that's a good way to have them, you know, help pay their college tuition and to be able to, you know, continue on and really develop the farm team to be able to run a lot of these things that we need. I know John Manigan from Munising runs the boat tours, looking for deckhands, looking for captains for these boats. Those businesses are really starting to grow down there. We're starting to see more tourism in these places, and we got to have people to be able to work.
You mentioned about the vocational training. That is a shift in mindset that's been, you know, gaining popularity over the last several years, not to downplay the importance of going to college and the value of getting that education and moving on to, you know, a great career. But it's left a little bit of a gap. We have fewer people that are trained in skills and, you know, in trade skills and other forms of education. That's not just strictly going to get a four-year degree. And we're seeing, especially some of the local schools, the high schools, addressing that by saying, okay, you know, college is wonderful, but it's not always the best choice for everybody. But there's, you know, that doesn't mean people need to fall by the wayside because certain skill sets are needed, and addressing that by giving that education when available.
You know, a lot of folks, I think that we all think about, you know, vocational training and the skilled trades as a plumber and electrician and, you know, different things, but I think it's beyond also that. I mean, I've had a lot of good conversations with Delta Dental out of Lower Michigan. I talked to my local dentist here in the district. Everybody's looking for dental hygienists. You know, and that's another thing that I think that there's such an opportunity for us to be able to develop vocational training in one of our local schools to do the dental hygienist program. I mean, this is something that, you know, those folks get those jobs when they come out. They're making $20, $25 an hour. They're working a four-day work week. I mean, these are great. And I think that we got the opportunity to start looking outside of the box to what are the jobs in the future going to be? How can we train our young people? How can we partner up with a lot of these different businesses to say whether it's agriculture, whether it's the dental hygienistry, to be able to put people together and really look at the future and develop those people and capitalize on it, because we can do it up here. We have done a lot of great things over the last 150 years just in developing different industries, whether it was the mining industry, the logging industry. A lot of high-tech things came out of our area, and I think that we're sitting on a gold mine here as far as having Michigan Tech in our backyard to help develop these systems. You know, Finlandia, Gogebic Community College for vocational training. I mean, it's all right here. We got all the pieces to the puzzle. We just got to get them put together and start turning out a workforce that is in such a high demand, and they're looking for these folks. I mean, I think one of the biggest examples we have is, you know, the job fair at Michigan Tech. We have all these wonderful companies coming from all over the world. They can't get enough of our wonderful kids that are coming out of Michigan Tech. It's just amazing. I mean, you run into these folks all over the state of Michigan throughout all my travels. And, you know, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of Huskies out there.
That is one of my favorite events to go to during the year is the Career Fest. It's a lot of fun. I know you personally don't have a ton of control, and Democrats in general don't have a lot to say so as far as where funding goes in the current political climate in Lansing. But we're talking about education, and so let's just asking about funding. What's the future looking like? Are we going to see increases coming down the line, or what do you gauge there?
Well, how I gauge it is that people out in the public are demanding that we fund the K through 12 education system better. We've had an independent report that came out. We're short about $1,000 per pupil. I mean, up here we're about $7,600 per student. You know, the report said we're going to need about another $1,000 ahead. And I think that, you know, us as the lawmakers have to really dive into the budget process. You know, we have a $55 billion budget. I've been down there 4 years. It has increased from $46 billion to $55. That's why I've always been opposed to any budget increases, and I'm always a no on it, because we have plenty of money in that budget that we collect from the state of Michigan. We just have to take a look at it and do it a little more wisely in my end, you know, just to make sure that the money goes for the education. I think that, you know, we need to have some more fiscal hawks like myself who are penny pinchers, that are former business owners, that say, you don't need that. And one of the things that I see is that the Capitol View building is being leased for $134 million over the next 30 years. That money does not need to be spent. I mean, we have currently an office building that's the Farm Building in downtown Lansing across from the Capitol. It houses our 38 senators. It needs a new roof. It needs a furnace. It needs to be updated. It needs about $10 to $15 million. That's what we do up here in the UP. We fix our houses, we fix our small businesses, and we make do. But in Lansing, a lot of times our priority for a lot of folks is just to keep spending money out of the well, because they don't have to write the check out of their own pocket, but we do. That's our tax money. And for us to be spending $3.5 million per senator, again, $3.5 million per senator for 38 of those folks to have a new office, unacceptable. That money is just one example of where it could be put in education to do vocational training across the state. These are the things and the decisions that have to be made, and they have to be changed. And I'm very much on that issue. I just think that, you know, we just can't continue to spend the money where it's not going to the right spot. We need an education. We got to fix the infrastructure. We don't need to have new office buildings for $134 million. I mean, come on. This is just, it's over the top for me. Some of these issues that come up, and I can't even imagine.
Now, the Capitol View building, the project that you've been referencing, is, for those that are listening that, you know, may not be familiar with this, this is a move that was made to have the Senate offices moved to a private building, I believe.
That's correct.
You introduced legislation, I believe, in the spring that said, okay, we can't have our offices in where there's registered lobbyists in there as well. I mean, usually we kind of want to separate those.
Yeah, usually we have a separation between, you know, where we're using our tax dollars. And I think that we got to have that separation. I mean, we should have a building that is, you know, owned by the state, owned by us, the taxpayers, maintained by us. And I don't think that we should be in a building where we got registered lobbyists that are on the next floor. I just think that, you know, we got to get our priorities straight. I think that's the biggest thing that people got to realize in this election in the state of Michigan. We have to have our priorities straight. We cannot be continuing to think about all of this extra fluff that we don't need. We have to look at the dollars we have and where they're going to go for the best for the state. And an office building, to me, is not one of them. Education, fixing the roads, let's get the economy, let's do work on those issues. That's where we got to focus.
And you've recently asked the Attorney General, Bill Schuette, to look into this. Do you believe that there was a crime committed rather than just regular misappropriation?
I truly believe that there has been a lot of things that have taken a path down there. When we see how this got done with the outcome of a building that's getting leased from the low bidder, who is so politically connected to the past majority leader of the Senate, you know, we just start looking at it and it just doesn't pass the smell test at all. And then when you go on the Secretary of State's website on Bureau of Elections, you can see every nickel that anybody has ever got from this group. And that's the disappointing part to me, is that, you know, where a lot of these folks have a lot of influence. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the way it is. And I think that, you know, the spotlight had to be put on it, and I put the spotlight on it because I think the whole thing stunk from day one. The whole thing, as far as even moving into a building like this when we have a building already. So I think that, yes, we have asked the Attorney General to do something about it. And I am disappointed the fact that, you know, we have been getting kind of the runaround. You know, he is the Attorney General. I have a lot of respect for the man. Just I want to see him do his job on this.
Last time we spoke, a big issue was the dark store legislation that you were a part of as well. And, you know, I got to say, for about the first 6 to 9 months that this was being, discussed, you know, the only thing I had ever heard about is what I would read in a press release. And then I'm sitting in a Houghton County board meeting, and they start talking about, you know, local businesses going, you know, with the dark store rulings and hurting Houghton County. I said, wow, this is really hitting home. You were right about this and on the forefront.
What has happened with that dark store issue is the fact that it's hitting all 83 counties, and it's hitting it hard. No matter who comes to your community, and doesn't matter what size commercial property that they're buying, they're coming to the tax tribunal once it's up, and they're saying, I made an investment. There's an auto parts business that we have in Houghton, and they're going to put in for a reduction on their taxes. So the building may have been created for, say, $700,000. So we would have taxes that would be collected off the $700,000. They go to the tax tribunal and they say, well, if we close the door and the store was dark because of a certain color in the brick, it's probably worth $50,000 to $100,000. So they want to pay taxes on that amount. Us as the taxpayer do not have that luxury on our own homes. We're paying whatever gets sent from the county for tax collection. I think that issue is something that if we don't get done with the legislation, it has passed out of the House. It was 97-4, the bill. I mean, it was huge. It was a huge margin to be able to pass it out of the House. It's going to get referred over to the Senate, and they have been reluctant to take it up in committee because there's been a lot of pressure from the Chamber of Commerce. They do not want to have that bill come to light because they don't want to have to take a vote on it. And what I've been telling a lot of the people, a lot of our taxpayers, my constituents, members of the Small Business Chamber of Commerce like myself, I'm a member of the Keweenaw Chamber of Commerce, business owner currently also, and the fact that we need to have people call their state senators and make sure this is a priority. Because if we do not do this, either we got two options for the counties across Michigan, I'm talking all 83 counties. Either we reduce by 20% or we're going to have to slash services because we cannot financially going to afford this into the future. You're going to just have your tax base is going to just erode. And then what will happen is if we want to keep the services in the county is going to have to take a look at who's paying their taxes, the residents, the residential ratepayers on their taxes. So I think that, you know, that's something out there that people have to really understand how this is going to affect all of us. One thing that I have been doing is reaching out to the Association of Counties, the Township Association, the Association for the Road Commissions, and the Michigan Municipal League, and I've been telling them point blank, if we have folks that are elected officials in Michigan that will not support good legislation to help all 83 counties, they should not be endorsing them. And I include myself in this. I'm saying that if we're not flying straight and we're not pushing for legislation, which is good legislation, and we're worried about passing legislation on picking morel mushrooms or changing the state insect or figuring out what new butterfly we want to put on there for that legislation, I think we got a problem.
Scott, you're going for your third term, and if my memory serves correct, that would be your final term as state representative due to term limits. Looking back on your first two terms, are you happy with what you've been able to accomplish?
I am. I'm very happy for being able to serve the 110th District, these seven counties. It's an absolute privilege to be able to work for the people of the 110th District. My proudest thing is to be able to have the access directly with my constituents, and when they have a problem, they reach out and we take care of that. I mean, the legislation to me is second fiddle. What is important to me is to be able to, when somebody calls and they got a problem with unemployment, when they got a problem with some state agency, we're able to help them. Whether it's a transfer of a liquor license for a business, whether it's somebody that calls in that was on unemployment and maybe worked 1 week and got kicked out of the system and is waiting to get their benefits back. That's what's important to me. That's what really keeps me going, is to be able to take care of those issues. And that's what really keeps me focused. I mean, I had a person that had an accident here that called me last week that's going to be looking for transportation to Ann Arbor to have a surgery on his foot because his foot got crushed, and I'm going to Lansing once a week, and we'll make sure the guy gets down there because I'll bring him. That's what I'm all about, taking care of the folks.
Scott, if somebody has a question for you or your campaign, how do they submit it?
They can call me direct with my cell phone number, 906-369-3338 is my cell phone number. And also they can look me up at scottdianda.com.
Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Rick.
Copper Country Today will be right back.